we're just going to go back and forth between us, really, and tell a few stories, I guess, of how we see the legislation impacting on our lives, how we experience it impacting on us. I'm Sue McNamara, and this is my partner, Leanne, and our baby, Cara, who's 5 weeks old. Leanne and I have been together for 8.5 years, and we had a commitment ceremony with family and friends about 7 years ago and consider ourselves to be life partners. Both of us have worked, have background in the youth sector and in education, in community welfare. I've worked in local government, and currently we both work in the public education sector. We're contributing community members through volunteer work. We make regular financial contributions to charities. We provide ongoing respite care to a foster child. And we're good neighbours. As I said, currently we work in public education. We pay our taxes and bills on time. All of these things contribute to our community and our society. Yet we're alienated from this community through many laws which discriminate against us based solely on who we love. I wanted to start by telling a little story. A couple of years ago, about 2 years ago, we were staying with Leanne's family interstate, and Leanne's 5-year-old nephew decided that he'd like to marry me. And so one morning he proposed to me. And Leanne said to him that he couldn't marry me because I was already with her. And he said to me, "But you can't be married because you're two girls." And I asked him, "Who says we can't be married?" And he said, "The Prime Minister." He comes from a family who accepts us as a couple. He has only ever known us as being together. We were together before he was born. And yet he has still got the message that who we are is wrong and our life together isn't acceptable. This to me really illustrates the impact that these laws have and how pervasive they are in influencing the opinions and attitudes of our community and even our families towards us.
Connected to that story, I was recently asked to speak on a panel looking at bullying, homophobic bullying in schools. And one of the things I said on that panel is that we're not going to be able to address homophobic bullying in our schools while we continue to live in a society where our leaders say it's quite all right to single out, discriminate against and unfairly treat GLBTI people. And we have a 5-year-old who's keenly aware of that already. So in schools, it's going to continue, and the health issues that will come from that, mental illness in our young people who are targeted, is going to continue to increase. And although not exactly connected to what you're looking at, I think those kind of impacts on our society and our young people and the teachers, having been a teacher in education who has also been singled out for homophobic bullying, is what happens. And as far as a workplace issue, I don't think we're supported in that as educators who happen to be gay or lesbian. We've also have homophobic slurs in the street. We had a car steered towards us one night while we were walking down the street, and those kind of things unfortunately are a part of our life, and why our leaders continue to discriminate, I think that will continue to be a part of our lives.
We wanted to talk a little bit about the impacts of the legislation on us as new parents to Cara. We took a long time to decide to become parents for lots of reasons, not just those related to the legislation and the impacts on our family. We considered initially adoption, but we're simply not able to in this state, and so it really wasn't an option for us. And even if the proposed Relationships Amendment Bill in South Australia is passed, we still would not be able to access adoption or IVF in South Australia. We started off as foster carers and cared on a long-term basis for a young child. And it's really ironic that we're allowed and considered to be okay to care for foster children, for kids who have, you know, had a very difficult early life experience, but we're not seen to be fit to adopt or to access IVF to have our own children. It was also really interesting when we did decide to try and get pregnant that a number of people, when I told them, their response to me was, "Is what you're doing legal? Are you allowed to do that?" not congratulations or that's fantastic, which I would think is a common experience for heterosexual couples.
The experience of Cara being born was actually quite a traumatic one. She's not due for another 2 weeks. So she shouldn't actually be out in the world. So it was an emergency caesarean and 7 weeks prem and small for her age as well. So many concerns. I was able to attend the caesarean and be in the theatre when that happened. But had anything gone wrong, I may or may not have been consulted or legally recognised as Susan X of kin. And that was quite concerning. It depended on the goodwill of the staff. Cara needed to be retrieved by ambulance from the hospital where she was born to go to a neonatal intensive care in the city. So 4 o'clock in the morning, my partner's in recovering from major surgery, my daughter's about to get loaded into a thing that looks like the TARDIS to go in an ambulance and go to hospital, and I'm having to make sure that the retrieval nurse is very aware that I am her mother, and had to find the head nurse of the special care nursery to make sure my name was on the paperwork, because Sue couldn't follow the ambulance. I was the one who had to jump in the car and follow the ambulance, and I did not want to arrive at the women's and children's and be told, you know, who are you, your name's not anywhere, you can't see your daughter. Having done that, if anything had gone wrong while we were waiting the 6 or 7 hours for Sue to arrive, I would have had no say in that. I would not have been consulted about what happened with Cara. Had anything gone wrong with Sue back at the other hospital, I possibly would not have been consulted or had any say in what happened there. I'm not on Cara's birth certificate. I'm in no way recognised as a legal guardian or a parent, despite the 2 a.m. feeds that I'm involved in. Sue's taking leave from work, so I currently have 2 dependents, though I won't have any tax recognition around that. Cara will not be on my Medicare card. I'm using my annual leave at the moment because I can't access parenting leave. It's just very lucky that I have an understanding manager who has allowed me in this emergency situation to be taking leave that was not planned. And at the moment I'm trying to juggle that, so I've got some leave later on in the year to enjoy with my family. We're not supported by the safety net. Not only with Cara, but over the last 5 years I've had 2 surgery twice. Both times required Sue to stay home and care for me for a time. She was not able to get carers or family leave. And because we're not put together for the threshold, my expenses didn't quite make the threshold, so we weren't financially supported in those surgeries either.
Some other work-related issues that perhaps don't directly tie to this inquiry but are linked, I guess. A number of years ago I was working in local government, and at the time it was when our enterprise agreement was being bargained, and I was a member of the union, and the union did some consultations with union members about issues that they'd like to see included in the enterprise agreement, and I put forward issues about same-sex couple recognition and the provision of parenting leave and family leave for same-sex couples. This was duly noted by the union and was taken to a union meeting, and they had, I guess, published all the things that people had put forward. And I arrived at the meeting, and there was quite a number of people there sitting in this room. And I was sitting behind a couple of colleagues from the organisation, and people were reading through the list of issues that had been raised. And the 2 women in front of me obviously had just read the thing that I'd put on there about same-sex couple recognition, and had a huge conversation about who would have put that on. There wouldn't be anyone in our organisation who'd need that. Why do we need to have that in there? That's just ridiculous. And I just felt so unsupported, I guess, and so not recognised in my own workplace. And I felt really glad that I hadn't spoken publicly, because they just had no understanding of the needs of people in their workplace that they thought were invisible. Another issue, I guess, that impacted directly on us that was related to work was when we first became a couple, I was working part-time for two church-based charity organisations, and in one of those workplaces my contract came up for renewal. And so involved with that was a very thorough performance appraisal around the position, because they were looking at transferring it from a part-time to a full-time position. The performance appraisal was very positive, and it was recommended that I be made full-time. So we entered into contract negotiation, and as part of that contract, the church-based organisation had a clause in there about living their ethos, and if you failed to live the ethos, that would negate your contract. So I wanted to clarify exactly what that meant, and in the course of that discussion, the nature of my relationship came up, and at that point the contract offer was withdrawn and I was out of a job. This organisation had an exemption under South Australian Equal Opportunity Law. My other part-time job was also with another church organisation, and at that time I chose to leave this position without saying anything. It took me quite a while and subsequent counselling to recover from this experience. And this had an obvious financial impact on us because I was unemployed for some time.
As we've mentioned, the lack of tax concessions are another financial issue. We've had to be very deliberate in making decisions, financial decisions. So buying a house and those kind of things wasn't just a joyous thing to do. We had to be thinking about both names on absolutely everything. All our bills are in both names, a house, car, anything financial, we have both names. While Sue's on maternity leave, you want to talk about that?
Sure. I am currently on maternity leave, although I don't consider myself to be a single parent, I will claim single parent benefit because the current law won't recognise us as a couple, even though we state that on forms. We've done that before to Centrelink. We've clearly written across things, we're a couple, but you don't recognise us. If you're still willing to pay us this benefit, thanks very much. Because we miss out on other tax offsets, as we've mentioned. We don't get recognised within the Medicare threshold, so we're missing out on other financial supports. And so I guess we feel some sense of justification in claiming a benefit that if they're not prepared to recognise us as a couple, then I'm prepared to accept that benefit. I know that many people within this inquiry have mentioned superannuation. We are very fortunate as a couple at the moment because we both work in the public sector. We're covered by public sector superannuation in South Australia, and legislation was amended in this state several years ago to recognise same-sex couples for the purpose of state superannuation. It is ironic that we're recognised for our super, but we're not recognised for family leave or carers leave, which is just a bit bizarre. However, I have a private super fund which I started when I first started working at the age of 18, and they will not guarantee Leanne as a beneficiary of my superannuation. But for me to transfer this money out of that private super fund into my public sector super would cost me over $2,000 in fees to be able to do that. And so it's like this sort of catch-22 of, you know, if I choose to move it to ensure that Leanne will be a beneficiary, I'm going to actually lose quite a bit of money.
Just in closing, about four times a year, I'm asked to speak to community services students as a part of a panel on diversity. And every time I speak of the ways in which myself and my family and others in the GLBTI community are discriminated against, I'm met with disbelief. These students from all walks of life, age groups and socioeconomic backgrounds are unaware of how their government treats us, and most believe it to be wrong. I don't believe the majority of the Australian community agree with our current government's stance on same-sex relationships and individuals. The government doesn't hear these voices because as a whole they are unaware. And making them aware is near impossible when the media, as we can see here today, don't pick up and give airtime to these issues. They don't come when we have our parade, our pride parade. They don't come unless it's the Mardi Gras with people with all their bits hanging out and dancing around. The media's not there. They don't want to hear this. They don't want to let people know. And so the government believes that the majority of the Australian people are behind them, and I believe they're not. As much as it would be nice to somehow be special, we're not. We're your average suburban family living and loving together, working hard and contributing actively to our community. Yet for some reason we are actively discriminated against in every aspect of our lives. We don't want special treatment, just what others who are not in same-sex relationships can expect from their legal and social systems. We just want equality. Thank you for allowing us the time to speak. We appreciate the opportunity, but must admit to becoming emotionally drained and tired of having to justify why we should receive what is in fact a basic right as a member of our society, a right we are denied simply because of who we love. Please hear our stories and encourage those who hold the power to also listen so we can just get on with enjoying our family. Thank you.
Certainly, and thank you very much for that. Can I just ask you one or two questions?
Yep.
You mentioned in your submission to us some steps that you had taken with powers of attorney and guardianship to try and protect yourselves. Could you just tell us what you've done in regard to both those issues?
We've taken our enduring power of attorney and power of guardianship for each other to try and cover issues one of us did have a serious, you know, health issue or so forth. But in an emergency, you don't always have that stuff with you, so it just, can be quite tricky.
And what have you done about guardianship for Cara? Because I presume that...
We haven't actually
done anything at the moment.
We're not quite sure.
I can't adopt because for me to be able to adopt, Sue has to give her rights as a mother.
And you become the mother then.
Which is bizarre. And as we mentioned, I'm not even on the birth certificate in this state. So there's actually not much we can do at the moment.
It is possible for Leanne to apply for guardianship to the family court.
Down the track.
But you need to show a level of relationship with the child, and so usually you need to wait some period of time before they'll consider that as a possibility.
With your private super fund, have you tried to protect yourself through your will on that? Have you got will?
Understanding is that doesn't always hold. That can be overridden from stories that we've heard of other couples, but
yes, well, there's certain tax implications too. You said you put both your names on your assets and on bills. I can understand why you're doing it on assets. What do you see as the need for bills to have both names on them?
I guess it's just another way that we've thought about it, of trying to show our financial interdependence, that you know, everything is financially shared, that it's not, you know, one person who's responsible financially, it's everything's jointly shared between the two of us, to try and keep illustrating that interdependence.
Our bank accounts in both names, we don't have independent bank accounts. Everything we try and keep so that at any stage should something happen, it's very clear that we're a couple.